Welcome to the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
It's Indiana.
Watford for the win! Yes! Yes! Unbelievable!
Your daily home for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
Welcome to Indiana basketball.
Smart takes the shot! And the Hoosiers with 3 seconds. Go ahead.
Indiana wins the championship. Keith Smart is the hero.
When my time on earth is gone and my activities here are past, I want they bury me upside down and my critics can kiss my...
Now here's your host, Matt Dennison.
It's Indiana. What I feel is the pinnacle, the absolute pinnacle of all of college basketball.
And hello, welcome in. It's a Thursday edition of the Hoosier Report. Glad you're with us today. Lee Kelly is in studio with me, as always, on Thursdays. Lee, long time no see. We were together last night for an extended high school baseball game. That one took a long time, but it was a fun game. And our first game of the season, New Albany and Floyd Central out at Mount Tabor Field. Glad our baseball coverage is back. A lot of runs in that game, a lot of hits in that game, a couple home runs in that game last night. And a lot of fun to think that next Wednesday, less than a week from now, we've got New Albany-Jeffersonville, another big rivalry game. Fun time of year.
Yeah, absolutely. And it takes a long time to score 26 runs. Is that what it was last night? It takes a while. But I'm a guy that likes a lot of offense. We saw that last night. Saw some great defensive plays. And you're right, fun time of the year.
Absolutely. Let's take a look at the guest lineup today. It's presented by Honey Baked Ham in New Albany. In segment one, Lee and I have some headlines. We call them Hoosier headlines, a summary of the day's top IU and Southern Indiana sports news presented by Hoopster Sports Grill in Jeffersonville. Then in segment two, Alex Bozich of Inside the Hall. He's with us today. We'll talk IU basketball. We'll talk Romeo Langford nearing the NBA draft and some of the activities that will take place in the coming weeks for him, potentially, depending on, I should say, how his hand heals up from surgery last week. Other IU basketball stuff as well with Alex when he's with us a little bit later in the program. And I'm also excited about our guest in the second half of the program today. We'll be joined by Kyle Getter. He is on the staff of Virginia, the team that just won the national championship on Monday night. Kyle is the director of recruiting and player development. He's on the bench. He's basically like another coach. There are some stipulations put on the additional positions that the NCAA allows beyond your normal assistant coaching positions. But we'll talk with him. It's been fun, I know, for him to be part of this. He's a big part of it. And, of course, the NCAA tournament, specifically some of those Virginia games, were just absolutely great games to watch, and I can't even imagine being part of them from a coaching perspective. And, of course, going through the Final Four, coaching a guy like Kyle Guy, a former Indiana Mr. Basketball, there's just a lot of things we can talk about with Kyle, who our connection to him is he played college basketball himself at Hanover, and he'll be with us a little bit later in the program today. So not often you can say you got to have a staff member of the national championship on your radio program, so I thought, why not? It's a little bit slower time right now. Basketball's important. That's just kind of learning about some of the things that go on during a run to the championship, I think, will be very interesting. And I look forward to having Kyle a little bit with us later in the show. That's the guest lineup, a service of Honey Baked Ham in New Albany. Mention the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison. You'll receive $1 off your box lunch at Honey Baked Ham in New Albany. Let's look at some Hoosier headlines. A summary of the day's top IU and Southern Indiana sports news presented by Hoopster Sports Grill in Jeffersonville. And a lot of coaching stuff going on. Mick Cronin gets the UCLA job earlier in the week. Of course, the Nevada coach went to Arkansas, I believe, and that leaves an opening at Nevada. And there were some reports, we actually mentioned this last night during the baseball game, but there were some reports that surfaced last night that former IU player, Indiana native from Newcastle, Steve Alford, is the front runner for the Nevada head coaching vacancy. And even last night, some tweets and some reports out there that they are basically in contract negotiations. So everyone wondered, what would Steve Alford do next? Would he coach again? Would he maybe do TV? Would he take another job in the world of basketball? Would he maybe sit out? It's not like he doesn't have the money to take it easy for a bit if he wants to. But instead, it looks like he's pretty close to getting back in the Division I coaching game. So Nevada's been a, I guess you call it a mid-major program. They've been solid. They've been to the NCAA tournament. They've been able to recruit some good players to that program. Obviously, the coach was able to move himself up the ranks by going from Nevada to Arkansas. I think that happened last week. So good to see Steve Alford back. I know there's some IU people that adore and will always adore Steve Alford and remember him all the way back to his days playing as a Newcastle Trojan. And, of course, there's some maybe that have been disenchanted that he didn't ever come back to Indiana or that they're glad Indiana never went that route with Steve Alford. But nonetheless, I think it's great to see an alumni of the program get back in after, really a tough – UCLA's been a tough deal, not just for – Steve Alford, but for a number of coaches that have been there in recent times, and we'll see if Mick Cronin can turn that around. But I'm glad to see Steve back. It looks like back, close to being back as a head coach in the Division I game.
Yeah, I certainly wish Steve Alford no ill will. I don't want him to be out of work. I still don't think he would have ever been a great fit for IU, but that's my opinion. Again, we see coaches being recycled from this place to that place. You mentioned UCLA. That is one of the great mysteries to me of why they haven't had more success since John Wooden left. There are a lot of really good basketball players in and around California, in and around the LA area alone. That's not even taking into consideration the players that would love to live in the Los Angeles area, where that campus is located is absolutely gorgeous. Pauley Pavilion is a very nice facility. I just don't understand what has happened. I mean, I understand 2 or 3 years in a row. Okay, you made one bad hire for a coach maybe, but for that long to have that little success just amazes me.
And clearly as they went through the coaching search, which again, their search didn't just start when their season ended. It started back at the new year. Steve Alford was let go essentially smack dab in the middle of the season. I know some of the coaches they pursued, maybe it didn't work out only because of buyouts and other things unassociated with, oh, I don't want to go to UCLA. I don't know that that was always the case. But it's clear that they, I don't know that I say struggle, but it's clear that it took them a while to get the coach they wanted and find a match. And, of course, it's a little different maybe from the UCLA program that we still think about as a blue blood or maybe a former blue blood of college basketball. But nonetheless, it looks like Steve Alford is close to a return. People are saying later today or tomorrow that that could be official. We will see. High school baseball, last night I mentioned that Lee and I were at Mount Tabor Field. We had a good one, 26 runs in the game last night between the two teams. It was a very active game. Lots, if you listened to our game or if you were there, lots of action, lots of calls. Three home runs, including a three-run shot by Blake Barrett, who was our Walnut Ridge star of the game at the conclusion of last night's contest, and very rightfully so for his performance all the way around for Floyd Central. But, Lee, I think we got a good look at two solid teams in high school baseball. No surprise, Floyd Central, New Albany, Jeffersonville, Providence, Silver Creek, and from time to time other schools, very, very solid, very, very good in our area. Both of those coaches saying, Matt, we got a lot to figure out. I don't know what to expect tonight. I think for Floyd Central, who maybe was struggling early on more than New Albany, it was a big win to beat the Bulldogs the way that they did last night. For New Albany, they've got some pitching. They've got plenty of weapons. I really feel like we're in for some real treats when we call the rivalry games this year. Like next week, I feel the same way about Jeff in New Albany as I did Floyd Central in New Albany, that it's within reason of very teams that are very similar and within reach of each other. So I think last night maybe we got a preview in a game that was very close throughout, other than a little spurt where seven runs were put up in the top of the sixth inning by Floyd Central. They built their lead there for a bit. New Albany was able to come back and make it a four-run game. Four-run game, the final score. But I think that that's maybe kind of a preview of what we saw last night for what next week's New Albany Jeff game could be like, or what some Hoosier Hills Conference tournament games could be like, or what the 4A sectional could be like at the conclusion of the regular season.
Yeah, and I think right now we have one team that had a lot of players back, and that's Silver Creek, and they're playing fantastic baseball. We have other teams that are playing well at times. They're looking to find their identity, looking to improve their chemistry, and the team that they are at this moment and the team that they will be at tournament time are going to be two different things in some cases. But there's a lot of talent on these teams. It's just a matter of getting it on a roll, building up your confidence, and getting everything in place.
A couple high school football notes, because hard to believe once the school year ends, and it's creeping up on us quickly, once the school year ends, we'll be back with high school football, of course, in the fall, and those guys stay very active over the summer. But we've mentioned this previously. I know Craig Pearson of the News and Tribune had a story yesterday to kind of to update folks, but Jeffersonville is looking for a high school football coach. Brian Gleasing, who was the longtime coach at Floyd Central, came to Jeffersonville, was there for just a year, and recently at the end of March accepted the Paoli job, which is a smaller school, a little bit outside of our immediate coverage area, but they've got a really good football program. You and I witnessed that when they beat Providence in a sectional championship game this past season, one of our final games of the year that we had here on the Big X Sports Radio. That said, it's getting late. You know, it's April. The early workouts have begun. A lot of strength and conditioning work is going on right now for the next football season. You know, the IHSA has conformed to a lot of other states where you're now able to practice much more 2 days a week in other sports than what you used to be able to do. And I know there's some specific requirements with each sport, especially football, with what you can and can't do, what does constitute a practice and what doesn't. But my point is that this is a big preparatory time for kids that play football that maybe aren't in baseball or another spring sport where they're getting ready for the football season already. So, Jeff, behind the eight ball a bit with Coach Gleasing taking a job in late March and looking for some candidates now, I'm sure, and hope to make a decision, I would assume, within reason so they can get someone in place. But obviously some turnover there at Jeff, a program that's unfortunately, because of their school size, been in Class 6A, which is darn near impossible. The sectional that even New Albany had to do that for a few years. You're in there with Center Grove and Columbus North, and those are just different animals when it comes to high school football in our state. New Albany dropped back to 5A first because of enrollment. Now Jeff is back to 5A, at least for a couple seasons, I understand. Part of that is because their enrollment, I think, has stayed about the same. Maybe another school or two has grown, but also a big part of that is that success factor, which has bumped a couple 5A teams like Columbus East up to a 6A football program. So interesting, Jeff, turnover, looking for somebody maybe that'll be there for a number of years. Brian Gleasing, obviously a great coach. He saw a really good opportunity with the program, a strong program he could take over at Paoli. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with that football coaching opening at Jeffersonville. I thought it was worth mentioning again today.
Yeah, I think Gleasing is much more suited to be at Paoli than he was at Jeffersonville. His background, his coaching style, and so on. When we went to Paoli, I had not been to Paoli, well, except with the basketball trip we took for sectional a couple of years ago. But facilities were very nice for football, except for the press box. We almost froze to death, but that's a whole other story. But the athletic director was a very, very nice man. We worked with him that night, and just I think it's a good situation for Brian Gleasing. Brian likes to take young kids, get them into the starting lineup as freshmen and sophomores. By the time they're juniors and seniors, they're awfully darn good. So I think this is a perfect setup for him. At Jeffersonville, I don't know. They always have athletes. Always have athletes. Sometimes they work out as far as on the football field. Sometimes they don't. So it's going to be interesting to see. They've tried going across the river and bringing people over to coach their team. That hasn't worked out too well. They've tried different people. Now you have to find a coach that can teach a particular thing that you have open. So it creates a whole nother problem.
One other high school football tidbit. Some people may know this. I don't know that this has been published, or I know we haven't discussed it here on the show, other people will might be caught off guard tonight if you are a fan of one of these schools. But New Albany and Providence, which has been a long-standing rivalry in every sport that the schools play, but specifically football, for a number of years now, it's been the first game of the season, so there's that extra build-up to it between the two schools. And there's a size difference, obviously, in class and in enrollment between those two schools, New Albany and Providence, but they're not going to play any longer in high school football.
Exactly. What is going to happen. Providence has replaced New Albany with Bardstown Bethlehem for their opening game of the year, and New Albany, as a result, has replaced Providence with Evansville Harrison. It is my understanding that Providence did not want to renew the contract for whatever reason. And it was tough for any coach at Providence. They opened the season with two 4A schools. I understand that. But, man, that was a big gate for the New Albany game, especially. I've been able to be at that game, seen that game, broadcast that game through the years. Regardless of whether it was at New Albany or Providence, it brought out a lot of people. Opening game of the year, guaranteed pretty nice weather most of the time. The students got into it. They wanted something to do early in the year, so they turned out in big numbers for both schools. It's a big gate, and so... as a result of that, it's my understanding that in addition to New Albany coming off the Providence schedule, Floyd Central will also come off the schedule as soon as that contract expires. So that's where we stand at the moment. I don't know how many people know this, but it's a done deal as far as that. So we'll see if it affects any other sports that the two schools play against each other. Could there be retribution where one school says, well, if you're not going to play us in football, we're not going to play in this or this or this or this. We'll see where it all plays out.
Interesting. You know, we have always built up that first week of football. Of course, we have play-by-play coverage of that game. It's always been a special game. And it's one of those things where we see great crowds at times, most schools in the area, especially for the big rivalry games. Unfortunately, for football, we don't always, even for some of the bigger games, you don't always see the crowds that you would hope to have and that you right. think the kids deserve. Because with football, you get weather early on. You may have storms and rain and who knows what else. And, of course, later in the season, even for big playoff sectional type games at times, the weather is just like you mentioned at Paoli for the Paoli Providence game. We were inside and I was miserable. I can't imagine being a coach or being a parent or a fan out, you know, in the bleachers watching that game. But my point is when you've got an opportunity to have two fan bases to kick the season off, the students get really involved. There's a big gate, which means both athletic departments benefit from that. You hate to see that go away. And I'm sure that coaches and administrators have other thinking besides just fans and money and things like that. But you hate to see something that's been successful for the area, for whatever the reasons may be, go away. That I guess that's the thing that I hate to see.
You know, and the thing is, before any fans react toward the coaches or the athletic directors, what I have been told to this point, certainly it isn't verified, this was not something the coaches or athletic directors wanted, came from much higher up. And so I don't know that there's blame is the word you want to use here. They just chose to go a different direction at Providence, and certainly they're right to do that. So it had nothing to do with the head coaches, had nothing to do with the athletic directors of two schools. Good relationships and good friendships there as far as I can tell.
Interesting. I think we'll hear more about this. What do you think?
I think so, too. I don't think
fans will be happy.
Do you remember when they stopped playing years ago?
No.
Maybe around 2000?
No, I don't.
It happened, and I can't really remember why it happened. I think there was probably some things going on behind the scenes, and New Albany dropped Providence at that time. So it went a few years, and then finally Providence was added back to the schedule. When it happened, there were a lot of New Albany fans really upset because they enjoyed playing Providence, had friends from Providence, had friends who had kids that played at Providence, and vice versa. Providence had players that wanted to play against New Albany. So it's happened before, and then eventually they found their way back to schedule. We'll see.
Don't forget, I'm one of those people, a proud New Albany graduate. and, of course, family to Coach Dennison, who I think has done a tremendous job at Providence.
I agree.
And big fan of him, obviously. So, interesting. I think we'll hear more about it. I think it'll come up again. I know as we preview high school football, which seems forever away but really isn't, I'm sure we'll talk more about this subject. Those are the headlines for this first segment presented by Hoopsters Sports Grill in Jeffersonville. Hoopsters is your hometown sports grill where hometown fans watch hometown teams play. Hoopsters was voted as the best sports bar, also the best place to watch sports by the News and Tribune's Reader's Choice Awards. Hoopsters in Jeffersonville, where fun happens. We'll head to a commercial break. We're back with Alex Bozich of Inside the Hall, IU Basketball, Romeo Langford, and more coming up next right here on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
We're back on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison. Join Matt daily at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
I'll handle this the way I want to handle it now that I'm here. You it up to begin with. Now just sit there or leave. I don't give a what you do. Now, back to the game.
Here's Matt Dennison.
Back on this Thursday program, Lee Kelly is with me in studio, and Alex Bozich of Inside the Hall is our guest today talking some IU basketball, and we're going to start with Romeo Langford. Alex, I guess it's been about a week ago that we found out from Jonathan Gavone of ESPN.com, who heads up their NBA draft coverage and does a great job each year, that Romeo Langford telling him he plans to declare for the NBA draft, and also kind of the bombshell there, I think, at least to me, was that not only was he declaring for the draft, but that same day, a week ago, he had had surgery on his hand, which might explain some of his shooting woes during his one and only freshman season at IU. Any update on, and again, I know this is something that we're not going to get a lot of update on medical conditions and things like that or how surgery went necessarily from IU, but any buzz out there about a recovery for Romeo and how the surgery on his hand could affect his ability to participate in a lot of the workouts and other things that coincide with preparation for the NBA draft in June?
Yeah, I don't know exactly the recovery time or kind of what the pre-draft plan is. I think they're still trying to figure out everything. As far as I know, as of a week ago when I checked in with some folks close to Romeo, he hadn't picked an agent or anything like that, so I think the process is just getting underway. But in a lot of ways, and it might sound weird to say this, it could help him a little bit with his draft stock if he's not able to do much before the draft, because, you know, if teams are made aware and they have the medical information that he did have surgery and that the injury was what he disclosed, which we have no reason to think it's not. I mean, that's one of the main things that teams have availability for before the draft is your medical history, complete medical history, really. They go through physicals and all that. So, you know, if now he has this explanation as to why maybe he didn't shoot the ball as good this season, now he's had the surgery, maybe it helps him because, you know, teams are going to, if that's all they know now is that he didn't shoot as well this season and he had this injury, now he has a reason why he didn't shoot as well. And they can kind of go back and look at the fact that when he was 100% in high school, his three-point shooting numbers were a lot better. So it's kind of a cat and mouse game, I think, every year with a lot of these top guys, what they actually want to do when they go to the combine, what they want to actually do when they go work out for teams. I mean, the tip-top guys in the draft, they usually don't do anything at the combine. And even if a team invites them to work out, a lot of them refuse to work out against other guys because, you know, what's the upside for them? If you're going to be picked somewhere in the top five, top ten, you don't necessarily want to open yourself up to have anything negative happen in the pre-draft process. And I noticed ESPN, I think, had a new Jonathan Gavone, you mentioned, they had a new mock draft come out today, I think it was, really early this morning. I think Romeo was somewhere in the 11-12 range. And so, I mean, if that's where he's going to go, and he gets a team that's going to pick that high, telling him, hey, you know, if you're there at this spot, we want you, I don't really know what the upside is for him to do much during the pre-draft process. Now, if teams are questioning him, and maybe he doesn't have a feeling that he's going to go as high as he wanted to, then maybe he, if he's healthy enough to do things, he'll maybe do some things. But I mean, we've seen this before. A guy like Darius Garland right now is being projected to go number four in the draft. He barely played at all this season at Vanderbilt, and the brief glimpses that people had of him were good. But if he would have played the whole season and maybe had a rough season, maybe he's not number four. So sometimes the less you're seen, the less teams have to pick you apart, the better it can be. So this ultimately could maybe be a bit of a blessing in disguise for Romeo.
Alex, along those lines, let me ask you this, because I know you're well studied on what's available and who the different people are. But we're in a day and age where anybody can have a website or a blog or a presence online, whether it's about IU or their favorite team in any sport or the NBA draft or whatever. So there's a lot of different mock drafts out there, and a lot of those mock drafts have Romeo Langford going in completely different spots and scenarios. But like in any industry or trade, there are some guys that aren't just putting out mock drafts because they love the game or they study the players or they have opinions on things, but they're putting out mock drafts talking to people that are truly involved in the draft process. They're talking to the players, they're talking to agents, they're talking to NBA personnel, they're going to the events themselves and figuring things out, watching and evaluating players. I get asked this all the time. Matt, we see Romeo here on this draft. We see Romeo way down farther in this draft. Can you give us a couple that are the most reliable to follow? I've always thought that Jonathan Givony, who's now with ESPN and used to have a Draft Express website where he traveled the world and still does, following not just guys in the States, but overseas as they develop and come up through their club systems and declare for the draft. I've always thought he's one of the guys to follow. Can you validate that? And do you have any others that Romeo fans, that IU fans, who might ask me that or who might be wondering right now, what's a mock draft you really put some stock in from year to year? Are there a couple that stand out to you, guys to follow, guys to look at?
Yeah, I mean, he's, to me, the best to read. The problem now for probably most people listening to this show, you have to have an ESPN Plus subscription now to read his stuff at ESPN, which is going to cost you, I think, $5 a month or $45-$50 a year. So you can read some of the stuff for free, but like today's mock draft, I know I have an ESPN Plus subscription, so I was able to read it. But a lot of that stuff is now behind a paywall, and that's part of the reason why he got hired by ESPN, so they could put that behind the paywall. He's good. There's a guy, I don't want to mess up his name, but the guy that does the draft stuff for Sports Illustrated's website is pretty good. Sam Vecenie of The Athletic, that's another one that's behind a paywall. Those are probably the three that I look at and trust the most. The caveat to all of this right now is all of these mock drafts that are being put out are based on the predicted order of finish. The NBA regular season is now over. They're just slotting teams in based on their record. The draft lottery has not happened yet. It won't happen until May. And so it won't be until that time that we actually know who's picking where. And then and only then can you really get a good idea of, where potentially Romeo could land, because it depends a lot on who has the pick in the spot. I mean, if there's a team that needs a center that's drafting 10th, well, he's not going to go 10th. But if there's a team that's drafting 9th and they really need a scorer on the wing, then that's when you can start to piece the puzzle together. The other thing about the draft is, we get so locked in on these mock drafts, and then the draft starts and teams make trades and things out of the ordinary happen all the time. So I think, the draft is usually held on a Thursday, so it's probably, I want to say, let's see, probably 10 or 11 weeks from today. So, it's closer than we think, but until we get the draft lottery results, I would continue to kind of look at Jonathan Givony, the Sports Illustrated guy. His name escapes me right now. Sorry about that. But and then Sam Vecenie, The Athletic. I think those are the three guys that I read the most, that seem to do the most research and have the most data. Like the one that used to be cited all the time was like NBADraft.net. I think it was one of the first ones, and that's now one of the ones I look at, and I'm like, what some of the stuff on there is just off the wall. You know, I try to trust the guys who actually go to games a lot and see these guys. And you're right, Jonathan Gavoni made a career out of going overseas. He was, I think, the first guy to see Giannis play and interview him. And he's a really, really good guy to follow through this stuff.
Alex, let me ask you about getting back to that wrist injury. I've had people ask me as recently as yesterday. They keep talking about Romeo hurt his thumb or his wrist at Christmas time, and they go, wait a minute, I remember when he was a junior that he went down during a high school game, and at times, maybe not every game, but for certain games, or there were a lot of games where he had that thumb tape similar to what he's had at IU after that December incident. So is this possibly the same injury that he had in high school, something totally different? Any thoughts or anything you've heard about that?
Well, I don't remember junior year because I wasn't as many games then, but senior year I was at pretty much, I think, every game at New Albany, or most of them. And I remember the game against Princeton, Ohio. I think it was, Matt, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but against Darius Bazley, where it looked like he hurt himself in that game. And
yep.
It never really looked the same the rest of the season. But I think my understanding was, you know, that injury had mostly healed over the summer. I think at one point, if you remember, late last summer, there was a brief period where IU fans were freaking out because there was a picture of Romeo and like a, what almost looked like a hard cast, and people were wondering kind of what was wrong with his hand or whatever. But my understanding was at the beginning of the season this year, you know, he was 100% or close to it, and then the injury, based on what was reported in the story by Jonathan Gavoni, what Romeo told him was that the injury occurred just before the Duke game this year. And you know, I didn't – it's not something where IU ever talks about injuries, and it wasn't something where if Romeo was up on the podium, we were going to ask him. I don't think he was ever going to say he was hurt, even if he was. But he just definitely didn't look – his shot just – it almost looked – if you go back, and I did this at one point this year, I went back and watched some video of him from like a sophomore year in high school, the release on his shot, and compared it to this year. And it just looked totally different. And to me, the only reason you do something differently, the way you kind of position your hands or do something different with your shot, is to get more comfortable. And maybe he was overcompensating for it. But I just think he's definitely a better shooter than what he showed this year. But in terms of the injury, I don't know if it's a recurring thing, you know, the same injury that he had. You mentioned something as a junior year. I don't remember that. But I do remember the Princeton thing. And then this year, to me, he just never looked – totally right, but it was never something that I don't think he ever wanted anyone to make an excuse about it, or they were never going to talk about it, so it wasn't something we could really dwell on all season. It just, you know, I think it's three of us here talking that are watching, you guys have watched him more than I have, but I just didn't think he looked totally comfortable shooting the ball all year.
Let me ask you this. I would think that, and I don't know much about the surgery that he had and how mm-hmm. quick the recovery is and that sort of thing, but I would think we would find out relatively soon how his hand is, because he's either going to start at some point doing workouts with teams and individual settings, or maybe in small group settings leading up to the NBA draft combine, which is a lot of that's televised now in Chicago, or
right.
He won't when other players start doing that, and we'll know that, well, he's either still recovering or has chosen, I guess he could just choose to sit out from that. As you mentioned, sometime less is more in an NBA draft situation. So I guess we would maybe find out more about the hand and the surgery and the recovery from that by if he's doing some of the workouts or not.
Yeah, I mean, it's only been a week, so I don't know how complicated of a surgery was or what the recovery period is, but it would seem to me that it'd be pretty uncommon to be back to 100% this quickly, unless it was something just really minor. And if it was something really minor, I don't think it would have knocked his shot off as much as it did all season. So, you know, the combine's interesting. You know, a lot of the top guys go and do the interview stuff with the teams, and they'll do the measurements, and they'll maybe do a couple drills. But this is my guess. I would be shocked if he is playing in like 5-on-5 or anything like that at the combine. Even if he was 100% healthy, a guy that has a chance to go in the top 10, you don't. I mean, it's just become the thing, you know, over the last couple of years. I mean, some of the top guys don't even show up to the combine at all. And then the guys who are, you know, first half of the first round definitely don't do anything like 5-on-5 scrimmaging and even don't even do some of the shooting drills, because it's like you've worked the whole season to get yourself into this position, and you don't want to do anything on that stage to kind of give teams a pause. And so if you have a feeling, you know, these agents do a great job of building relationships with these teams, and he'll have a good idea of, you know, where he's going once the draft lottery happens, and you know, you see who's picking where. These guys will have a pretty good idea of a range of where he's going to go. And, you know, if you're going to be a lottery pick, I just don't necessarily see taking the risk of doing anything that can hurt you from that. Because, you know, if you're picked anywhere, I think in the top 14 or 15, you're probably guaranteed at least $9-10 million over the first 3 or 4 years of your career, which that's life-changing money.
Absolutely. Alex Bozich inside the hall with us Thursdays here on the Hoosier Report. Alex, I know the NBA draft and Romeo and his hand injury and everything else leading up to the big event in New York City, or is it Brooklyn? Brooklyn, I think, maybe, the draft location.
I think it's Brooklyn at Barclays, I think. Yeah.
I think you're right. But leading up to that, I know this will kind of be a regular discussion point for us when you're with us, so we'll track it as it moves forward. Thank you, and we'll talk with you next week.
All right, guys. Have a good day. Thank you.
Alex Bozich inside the hall, always with us Thursdays. We're going to go to a quick commercial break. When we come back, a member of the Virginia staff that won a national championship on Monday night, Kyle Getter. He's got a connection to Southern Indiana through his playing days at Hanover. He's the director of recruiting and player development for the Virginia men's basketball team. We're going to catch up with him on what a fun NCAA tournament. And, of course, for the champions, what a fun week it's been since Monday night in Minneapolis when Virginia went on to win it over Texas Tech in a great finish. In overtime, that is. We'll be back with Coach Getter from Virginia after this on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
We're back on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
Let's win this one for all the small schools who never had a chance to get here.
Join Matt Daly at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
Let's win for Coach. You got us here.
Here's Matt Dennison.
We're back. Final segment on this Thursday show. Lee Kelly is with me in studio, and I really look forward to this segment and have been all week. It's Coach Kyle Getter. He's on the staff at Virginia, and our connection to him is through some mutual friends. Coach Getter spent time at Hanover College both as a player, as a student assistant, and then as an assistant men's basketball coach back in the early 2000s. And he, of course, is a national champion as he talks to us today, a part of the Virginia team on Monday night that defeated Texas Tech in overtime. First off, Coach Getter, thanks for taking a few minutes for some guys in Southern Indiana to catch up with you on what's been, I'm sure, just an unbelievable run through the tournament and, of course, the championship experience on Monday night. I know you guys have a lot of stuff going on, a lot of celebrations, I'm sure, to attend, and we're very appreciative and happy for you as well.
Oh, well, thank you so much, Matt. Greatly appreciate you having me on, and look forward to visiting with you guys here.
Well, we want to talk about some of the great moments of this wonderful NCAA tournament, one of the best that I can remember. And, of course, kind of get a bird's-eye view, maybe some behind-the-scenes discussion about how exciting it was to be part of a national championship team. But before we get there, you've been on this program before. You came on when you were an assistant coach at Liberty, I think either the day of or maybe the day before your team played at Assembly Hall a few seasons ago. So you've made some personal transitions in your coaching career as well. Tell us how you got from Liberty to Virginia.
Yeah, no, I remember being on the program back a few years ago, and I'm originally from Ohio, went to Hanover College, like you mentioned, and in 2008, I came to Virginia and worked for Richie McKay at Liberty, and we had Seth Curry on our team and had a great season, and that spring in 2009, Coach McKay joined Coach Bennett at the University of Virginia as his associate head coach. Coach Bennett had just been recently hired at UVA, and So I went to VCU and then worked at Radford and then went back to Liberty in 2015 when Coach McKay returned there as a head coach. And that's kind of been my connection to UVA, you know, just having worked for Coach McKay twice, and his relationship with the Bennetts. Coach Dick Bennett was a coaching mentor of his, and Tony Bennett was one of his closest friends. So, you know, that was able to open an opportunity for me here this past year, and, you know, just been blessed by the opportunity.
Talking with Kyle Getter, he's the director of recruiting and player development for the Virginia men's basketball team. He's with us today here on the Hoosier Report. Let's talk about the NCAA tournament. I've got your games, your scores in front of us. Wow. I can't imagine being a coach, being involved, being on the bench for some of those close contests, for some of those great games that you guys were a part of, including, of course, if anybody can't remember already, a overtime national championship game on Monday night.
Yeah, it's been surreal. It's really just been an unbelievable experience to have the type of season that we had, and you know, just especially with what happened last year. You know, our guys were just laser focused, and our theme this year was United Pursuit. And you know, I think it's kind of interesting that, you know, we did it as a collective unit. You know, if you look at all of our games in the NCAA tournament, you know, we had a multitude of guys, different guys, step up in each game. You know, if you go back to the Purdue game when, you know, Mamadi Diakite tapped out an offensive rebound off a free throw, and Kihei Clark, who's a freshman, had the poise to throw it back to Mamadi, who hit a last-second shot to send that game into overtime. And, you know, then Kyle Guy, an Indiana product there, making, you know, three clutch free throws against Auburn to put us in the national championship game. And then DeAndre Hunter, you know, just having an outstanding game in the finals there against Texas Tech. So, you know, we've had a different guy step up, and that's kind of how it's been all season for us. So, yeah, you know, it just really was fitting that our theme was United Pursuit.
When I watch Kyle Guy step to the free throw line for those three free throws, Coach, he seemed to be the most calm, cool guy in the entire arena. And then afterwards, I heard him interviewed, and they asked him about that, and he said, "I was scared to death, but I just didn't show it." That was a magic moment for any fan, I believe.
Yeah, and he's just such a great person. You know, I was so happy for him to be able to have success on that stage. And it's funny, you know, I had a bunch of people send me messages saying that as soon as, you know, the announcers that, you know, they're watching the game say former Mr. Basketball from the state of Indiana, you know, they were saying, "Oh man, he's probably practiced this in his driveway," you know, who growing up a million times before. But yeah, just, you know, happy for him, and, you know, couldn't happen to a better person. And he deserves, you know, the amount of success that he's had. I mean, he's really had a great career here so far in 3 years, being an All-American twice and, you know, All-ACC, and then, you know, to be able to do it on that stage was huge.
Kyle Getter is our guest. He's a coach at Virginia, national champion Virginia. He's the director of recruiting and player development with us today, talking about the national championship. I've kind of got a two-pronged question here for you, Coach. Outside of the national championship moment when you won it, is there something already, as you think back through kind of the dream that's happened, as you said earlier, that stands out to you as a defining moment or something that you will always hold special? And in addition to that, after you did win the championship on Monday night, can you explain what the evening was like? I can't imagine the celebration, the text messages, the people congratulating you and the coaches and the players, and, of course, the celebration that took place back on your all's campus.
No, sure. So that's a great question. So, you know, first I would say winning the ACC was definitely a marker for us. You know, the ACC is, you know, one of the most competitive conferences in all of college basketball, and, you know, being able to compete against the likes of Duke and North Carolina and Louisville and Virginia Tech, and, you know, just for us to be able to win, you know, win the conference, I think was quite an accomplishment. And I think, you know, that in itself just you know, that was a grind. And we talked about it throughout the year because we had quite a bit, quite a few, I think three or four Saturday Mondays. You know, I remember one specifically, we played Duke at home on a Saturday and College game day at like 6 p.m. And then Monday we had to go play at Carolina. And we're all sitting there thinking, oh man, this is going to be a grind, you know, just two huge games in a, you know, a short amount of time. Well, then you fast forward to the national championship and you're playing Saturday, Monday, you know, and it's the same setting. So I think that definitely prepared us. But I think, you know, just us being able to compete and win you know, the ACC, that was certainly, you know, something that I'll always remember. And then, you know, just you mentioned the amount of texts and people reaching out. It's been awesome. It's been overwhelming, but in a good way. I think it just makes you feel so good to hear from so many of your friends and family who are, you know, giving you support. And, you know, we, after the game was over, you know, to see the former players, Virginia players who, you know, Coach Bennett had recruited and coached here, you know, to be at the game and then back in the locker room. And, you know, they're as big a part of this as anybody that played, you know, on the team this year. You know, we call them the bricklayers because they laid the foundation. So to be able to see them celebrate as well, you know, was awesome.
Coach, it was good to be sitting at home watching on TV and see Ralph Sampson in the stands, that player I haven't seen in a long, long time, but they're in support. Let me ask you about winning the national championship. What does that mean for the program in the future as far as recruiting or anything else that might be involved in that way?
No, that's a great question. Ralph Sampson, he's certainly a great ambassador of not only our basketball program but our university. So we appreciate all the support that he's given, and you know, he certainly, you know, helped put Virginia basketball on the map, you know, back in his playing days. But I think, you know, just in terms of how this will affect our recruiting, you know, we're really going to try to recruit the same type of players that, you know, we have. And I think, you know, a lot of that is, you know, it has to be the right fit. You know, Coach Bennett is, you know, he's always talking about building a program that lasts. And, you know, we want guys that, you know, align with our program in terms of his five pillars that he's built this program upon. And, you know, we want talented players. I mean, don't get me wrong, but we also want five-star people. And I think, you know, just the resolve and resiliency that our guys showed in those close NCAA tournament games, I think, you know, the character was able to come out. So, we're looking forward to continue to build upon this.
Kyle Getter is with us. He's on the Virginia staff, national champions on Monday night, and joins us today on the show. I've got to talk some about your time and our connection to you, which is a graduate of Hanover College, just down the road a bit. You were an assistant coach there before you left as well to continue your coaching. Maybe some comments on your time at Hanover, and also you're from Miamisburg, Ohio, so not too far away from the state of Indiana. So you've got a great impression, not just in your time as a coach, but also I'm sure as a player, of what Indiana basketball is all about and what Indiana players have turned out to be, some of the great ones. And you've got a great one in Kyle Guy, as we've discussed. But maybe just some comments about Southern Indiana and Indiana basketball, and of course your time at Hanover as well.
Sure. So actually, my wife is from Connersville.
Okay.
And her dad, Larry Miller, was a coach at Southwestern there, high school there in Hanover, a long time ago. And I met my wife at Hanover. And just to give you a little bit of, you know, I my friends teased me. They said, "Man, you certainly knew what you were doing marrying a girl from Indiana," because I guess they had some water damage at the Spartan Bowl on their floor. And they, you know, cut pieces of the floor and, you know, sold them and auctioned them off for a fundraiser or whatever. And, you know, next thing you know, my wife had a piece of that floor shipped to our house down here in Virginia. And we got a coffee table with a, you know, as a piece of the Spartan Bowl.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's pretty cool. But yeah, I think, you know, Coach Mike Beitzel gave me my start at Hanover. And, you know, he really, you know, I owe him a lot. He trained me up, and him and John Miller, who's the head coach there, you know, they, you know, they trained me. They trained me, you know, what it was, what was needed to be a coach, what it was like, what, you know, how to recruit, you know, and all those things. And now I look back at, you know, some of the guys that I went to Hanover with, and, you know, Brandon Hoffman is one who, you know, won a state championship there at Silver Creek, and, you know, relationships with BJ McAllister and Brian Bowen. And I, you know, I could go on and on about the guys that, you know, just the Hanover basketball family, David Benner, Hank Whedon. I mean, you know, so those relationships are certainly ones that I appreciate very much. And, you know, just, you know, Hanover is a basketball school, and I'm very thankful for my time there.
Kyle Getter of Virginia, our guest. Coach, I guess this has to be the best off season. Of course, everybody hates when the season comes to an end. We dread the end of the high school season, but at least we know we still have the NCAA tournament and the Final Four to look forward to. Then after Monday night, that's basically a wrap. I guess NBA playoffs get a little more interesting to us when things get further down the road, especially the finals. But this will have to be the best off season probably that you've ever had as a national champion. You can enjoy it and all the festivities and the special things that come along with it all off season long as you look ahead and prepare to next year.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. We arrived back in Charlottesville on Tuesday, and, you know, with the police escort from the airport to our arena, and the streets were lined with people and fans, and just to be able to see their joy. And then we got back to our arena to a few thousand fans, and you know, I just think that it was awesome. It was just, you know, kind of gave you goosebumps a little bit. And, you know, our basketball program is certainly, you know, strives to be a part of the, you know, not only the university community, but also the community of Charlottesville. And, you know, I think, you know, just brought a lot of pride back to us, you know, just to be able to do that. And looking forward to, we're having a big celebration this Saturday at Scott Stadium, which is our football stadium. So looking forward to celebrating the championship there.
Kyle Getter, he's the Director of Recruiting and Player Development at Virginia. Very kind, Coach Getter, to take time out to join us on this Thursday program and talk hoops with some Southern Indiana guys. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on. I've enjoyed it.
Absolutely. Coach Getter of Virginia, awesome to have him with us after winning a national championship on Monday night. He's a rising star. I don't think any question about it. Obviously, he's positioned himself well, and maybe in two more years when we talk with him next time, who knows where he'll be at, or maybe he'll have his own program, which would be pretty cool. So good stuff. Thanks to him for coming with us today. Lee, thank you for being with me. That's going to wrap things up here on this Thursday program. Back tomorrow to wrap the week up at 11 a.m. This is the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.